Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? Ew, seriously. They squeeze the grease out of the wool and process it with chemicals, and then you eat it. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I got rid of products I didn't want anywhere near my body. I found that many multivitamins contain high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and even lacked some of the nutrients we actually needed. So what did I do? At 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. Ritual's products are made traceable, meaning we share the science and sourcing for every single ingredient. For example, our vegan vitamin D3 comes from sustainably harvested lichen in Nottingham, England, not sheep. We trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. See for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Everyone, Scott here. What you're going to hear in this episode is a snippet from the show Vlogging Through History. This is both a YouTube show and a podcast hosted by Chris Mowry. What you're going to hear is a story about the over 300 men who were executed by the British Army for desertion and cowardice during the First World War. Chris explores the process for executions and the stories of the men involved. This snippet ends on a cliffhanger, so to continue listening to the preview you just heard, search Vlogging Through History on your favorite app or podcast player to continue listening to episode 10. You can also find more links in this episode's show notes. Hope you enjoy.
World War I, which at the time was known as the Great War, was one of the deadliest wars in human history. Estimates vary, but something probably around 15 to 20 million people died as a result of the Great War, about half of that being military deaths, the rest being civilians for various reasons. But even in the midst of a great war, the armies of every nation had to deal with the problem of crime and punishment. When you're dealing with hundreds of thousands, if not millions of soldiers on the front lines, you basically have entire communities. You know, you have these divisions of 15, 20, 25,000 men. That's a small town where most of these countries are. And so you've got infrastructure built around that. You've got people living in close quarters. You've got to provide food and shelter and clothing. And you have to provide justice in those situations because there is going to be crime anytime you have large numbers of people put together. And so there was military justice and there were military courts, and each army dealt with those things in different ways. But specifically today, we're going to look at the British Army and how it dealt with crime and punishment. If a soldier was judged to have committed a grave enough offense in the military service, they could face a number of different punishments, imprisonment, there could be hard labor, even death. But for a death sentence to be approved, at least in the armies of the British Empire, it first had to be confirmed by the commander-in-chief in the theater. Over the course of the Great War, over 3,000 British, Dominion, or colonial soldiers were sentenced to death, but most of those sentences were eventually reduced to imprisonment, field punishment, or suspended altogether. And I should point out that when we're talking about the British Empire, we're talking about all of the countries that were under British rule in one form or another, or politically tied in some way to Britain. So we're talking about not only the United Kingdom, which is England, Scotland, Wales, and at that time still all of Ireland, but we're also talking about their dominions. We're talking about Canada. Newfoundland was a separate part of the British Dominion. You have Australia, New Zealand, but you also have India. You have South Africa as a part of that. And you also have parts of the Middle East. But out of the entire British Dominion, There eventually were 346 soldiers who were executed by firing squad. And most of those happened on the Western Front, France and Belgium specifically. And I'm actually looking at a chart for executions in the British Army by year and based on what offense they committed. In 1914, which was the first year of the war, the war starts at the beginning of August of 1914, so the second half of the year. There were only four executions in the British Army in 1914. Three were for desertion and one for cowardice. Now you go to 1915 and that number starts to climb. Now you have 46 desertion executions in 1915, four for cowardice, two for quitting their post, one for disobedience, and two for committing murder. In 1916, the number jumps again dramatically. 71 for desertion, 10 for cowardice, 2 for quitting their post, 3 for disobedience, 4 for murder. And now we add three new categories for which people are executed. 3 for striking a superior officer. Imagine that in the heat of the moment, you hit a superior officer and boom, you're executed for it. Didn't happen often, but it did happen. 1 for casting away arms, you know, throwing down your gun and saying, I'm not gonna fight anymore. And 1 for mutiny. 1917 is the peak of executions in the war. All of those categories again, but now we add 2 for falling asleep on post. Total of 104 in 1917. And then in 1918, there were 46, 10 for murder in 1918, by far the most. But the majority were for desertion and 1 for quitting post that year. So that gives you a little bit of a sense of the crimes for which these men were executed. There were some who were civilians, some such as the Chinese Labor Corps, which were civilians but were under military law. The one lone exception within the British Empire and Dominions was the Australian soldiers. The Australians made up a big chunk of soldiers on the Western Front, and they lost something like, I think, 13,000 Australians were killed on the Western Front fighting. But they had no executions for any of those crimes because the death penalty for Australian soldiers, the Australian government had transferred the power to confirm the death sentence from the British Commander-in-Chief to the Governor-General of Australia, a man named Sir Ronald Munro Ferguson, and he always reduced death sentences for Australian soldiers to imprisonment. So a couple of interesting things as I'm looking at all of these numbers, and there's a lot of analysis of the army. They're broken down by division, by what type of force there were, those things. There were, you know, basically what we're dealing with are about 300 executions that took place for some form of desertion or cowardice among the British armed forces during the First World War. The interesting thing to note is that the majority of those came among either the regular army, which what we're talking about is the army that existed before the war began. These are guys who were career soldiers. And then you have the volunteer army, which are the people who they're sometimes referred to as Kitchener's New Army. These were guys who signed up voluntarily because they wanted to fight, because they were answering their country's call to go to war. And then you have the conscripts, people who were drafted, people who weren't given a choice. The vast majority, and by vast majority, I mean almost all of the executions, happened among the regulars and the volunteers. There were 25 executions among conscripts, and the vast majority of those took place in 1917. So it's interesting to note that these men who end up being convicted of desertion were men who voluntarily signed up for the army, who went to war because they chose to. But there's a big kind of cloud hanging over all of this, and that is the understanding of what we know today as post-traumatic stress. And that's what I want to talk about a little bit. First, let's talk about what went into one of these executions. Once a death sentence was confirmed by the commanding general, it wasn't long before it was carried out. The men were taken to a suitable location as near to their place of confinement as possible. And I had an opportunity to visit one of those places in the town of Poperinge. And we're going to talk some more about that later on. But in Poperinge, it's really just maybe less than 100 yards from where the cells were to where the actual execution took place in town. So they were taken to a suitable location pretty close to where they were confined. And then according to a book called The Procedures for Military Executions for the British Army, it called for a squad of 12 men armed with rifles commanded by a lieutenant, or lieutenant, as they'll call them in the British Army. And steps were taken to avoid any undue strain on the enlisted men who made up the firing squad. Though, as I'm going to share with you in a minute, that didn't mean the strain wasn't there. So when the squad arrived at the place of execution, their unloaded weapons were laid on the ground and the men were actually led out of sight. The officer present would then load 10 of the 12 rifles with live rounds and two with blanks. This is something we've all heard before, and it did actually call for that in the procedures for military executions. And so the theory was this allowed each man in the squad to believe that they had fired the blank round and therefore had not actually killed the man. Now, of course, anyone who's fired something like a Lee Enfield rifle knows that it's probably pretty easy to tell the difference between a live round and a blank one, especially if you have fired rounds before. So how much that really worked, I don't really know how much that is the case. But in most cases, after the volley had been fired, the sergeant who was a part of that squad would then pull out his pistol and put a bullet in the head of the condemned man. We call that a coup de grace. Sometimes it would be the officer present who would do that. But it was a very brutal and very efficient way of dispatching with the condemned man. You know, I haven't taken a lot of time in my life to think about the psychological effect that it must have on the common soldier to be commanded to be a part of one of these firing squads, to execute one of your own fellow soldiers, especially for these guys who have been on the front lines and fought alongside these guys for a couple of years and had to deal with all of the horrors of war, and to know how many times you've probably had it cross your own mind to want to get out of that situation by any means necessary, to then be ordered to kill one of your own. It must have been horrible. And I've actually got some sources here, some descriptions from some of the men who were involved in these executions and what this experience was like for them. One of them was a man named Arthur Savage. And this is what he wrote about it. He said, "I was ordered to go on a firing squad in 1917. The man was led out by a military policeman and a priest. Then he was tied to his post. He only looked about 20 and wasn't very tall. An officer went up to put a blindfold over his eyes. I could hear his voice now, as clear as me and you talking in this room. He said, 'I need no blindfold over my eyes. Curse you and your blindfold, and may the judges who will surely sentence you one day show you more mercy than you've shown me.' Then we had to take aim. My hands were shaking so much, so I aimed about a foot to his left. Then we fired. There were 9 of us, and only one shot caught him in the side. He slumped forward, wounded. So I was not the only one firing wide deliberately. The captain walked up to him and put a bullet into his head. Some of the men were sick. Others were crying. Most of the poor sods were mainly convicted on the evidence of doctors. They would not accept that men could reach a point of utter exhaustion when, as a result of trench warfare, their nerves and brains would snap. These so-called doctors would not have it that there was such an illness as shell shock. They insisted that the men were cowards and deserters." At the age of 14, Victor Sylvester ran away from school and joined the army. In an interview he gave just before his death in 1978, he described how he was ordered to execute a man for desertion.
All right, that is all for today's episode. If you'd like to see show notes for this and all my other episodes and include sources, maps, or other relevant information, go to ParthenonPodcast.com. Parthenon is the name of the podcast network that History Unplugged is a part of, along with other great history shows like James Early's Key Battles of American History, Steve Guerra's Beyond the Big Screen and History of the Papacy, and other shows as well. If you'd like to support History Unplugged, there are two easy ways to do so. The first is to subscribe to the show on the podcast player of your choice and leave a review. This really helps the show grow. The second thing is to join our membership program on Patreon. And if you do so, you can get completely ad-free episodes of the entire back catalog of the show, which is 600 episodes and growing. Just go to patreon.com/unplugged. Thanks for listening and see you next time.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.